Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL, taking you through a gloomy Friday afternoon and into your Friday evening. And Matt Douglas still coming off that high a couple days ago when the Blue Jackets pulled off a sweeper, and now they're awaiting their second-round opponent. It'll be Boston or Toronto, and we'll continue to talk about the Columbus Blue Jackets as we bring in Ryan Mitchell with the Columbus Blue Jackets Radio Network. Ryan, how are you, my friend?
I am doing well, fellas. It's obviously heady times right now in Columbus, Ohio, with the Blue Jackets moving on to the second round in the for the first time in franchise history. So people are feeling pretty good down here, even in spite of the gloomy weather that appears to be pervasive throughout the Buckeye State.
Well, let's break down the first round upset over the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know, for those that maybe don't follow hockey and weren't really on point with just how big of an upset this was, what could you equate this enormous upset to?
Well, it's a very difficult question to ask. One of the things that I would think is something that they were showing in the arena during Game 4 in the latter stages at Nationwide. They had a montage of a fight from Tokyo, Japan, many long years ago, when a Central Ohio native by the name of James Buster Douglas defeated Mike Tyson. And it was a fight in which not many people thought Buster Douglas had a chance, and all of a sudden, he wasn't going away, and he was able to neutralize some of the things that Tyson did. Mike Tyson was well known, obviously, as a guy who was going to knock you out early on, and if you're able to weather that storm and show him that you weren't afraid, then maybe you could begin to shatter his confidence a little bit, wear him down, and impose your plan. And that's kind of what the Blue Jackets did in that first game when they were down 3-0 after one period. That's exactly what everybody expected to happen, and they figured that Tampa Bay would just continue on en route to a 5-1 or 6-0 win in that first game and then proceed to sweep the Jackets. That's what everybody figured was going to happen. And I'm not going to lie, I thought that was a pretty good percentage play as well. But in the second period of that first game, Nick Foligno scored a huge goal, and I think who scored it is as important as the fact that the goal was scored. And the Blue Jackets were able to skate that period without giving up another goal. Scoring the one goal was big, but not giving up another goal was even bigger, because they began to figure out how to keep Tampa Bay from carrying the puck into the zone. The forecheck got really, really good, and they were forcing Tampa Bay to kind of dump and chase, and that's not their game. And so when Tampa Bay got out of their game and couldn't find a way to get back into it, you could sort of start to see the confidence waning, and they started looking for answers, and they never did find them.
I was just going to say, I mean, you talk about the Nick Foligno goal, obviously was huge, but the beginning of that second period, up 3-0, Tampa Bay came out, and Bobrovsky made a Bobrovsky-esque save, and you knew he was in the playoffs, and he was true Bobrovsky form. And at the end of the second period, he makes another big save to keep it a 3-1 game. And I mean, without the goaltender playing the way he did, I mean, this series could have had a very different outlook to it.
Well, had that goal in the beginning of the second period when they had a 2-on-0 essentially with Kucherov and Stamkos in front of the net, and Bobrovsky makes that save. If that game goes to 4-0. I think the series goes the exact opposite direction. So Bobrovsky was great. Now, he didn't have to face a huge barrage of shots from the second period of Game 1 all the way until probably the second or third period of Game 4. But when he did, he stood in there, he stood tall, he looked calm and collected. And, you know, you say it was a Bobrovsky-esque save, and it was, but it was regular season Bob-esque. Right, the Vezina Trophy winner from a couple of different seasons. Bobrovsky has had nothing but problems in the playoffs. Game 2 was the first game in his playoff career in which he allowed fewer than 3 goals in a game. So has he turned the corner? Maybe. Have the Blue Jackets played really, really well within their structure and kept Tampa Bay from getting great scoring chances? Yes. Bobrovsky was able to see the vast majority of the shots. And with any NHL goalie, particularly as one as good as Bobrovsky is, if they can see it, they're probably going to stop it. And so I think there's a combination of things. Bobrovsky had success. He used the team in front of him's play to build confidence, make huge saves, build success, and hopefully for him, that is a turning of a corner going forward. Now, who knows what's going to happen in the second round? We still don't know if it's going to be Toronto or Boston. But Bobrovsky being regular season Bob during his prime, is a huge key to the Jackets moving on. If he's not great, they're not going to go anywhere. And you're right, Matt. His play in that series elevated everything. It's a rising tide raising all ships, the way the Jackets play, the goaltending, the defense, the offense, everything. They just sort of fed off of each other and wound up doing something pretty special in that first round.
As far as that went, too, the defense in that series for the Columbus Blue Jackets, anyone who watches the Lightning know they're fast. They like those stretch passes. Seems the Jackets had sticks constantly in the passing lanes there. And at least in my opinion, you can talk about the goals. There were many pretty ones. There were some big wins, especially in game two. Game four ends up being 7 goals, although a lot of those come on the empty net. But it was the defense that led the Blue Jackets through this series, I thought, watching it.
Well, certainly. The fact that they were able, as I said before, take away essentially the speed and carrying the puck that Tampa Bay loves to do. Tampa Bay, no doubt about it, has the most high-end skill on the ice in the National Hockey League. But if you can disrupt what they do and make them do something else where their speed doesn't play quite as much, then all of a sudden they come back to the pack, and that's what the Blue Jackets were able to do. They were able to clog up the neutral zone in such a way to prevent, as you were saying, those stretch passes and not letting the top-tier players carry the puck from the neutral zone into the offensive zone and then crash toward the net and then create with one of the other multi-talented Lightning players hanging around the net, maybe with an open look from one side or the other trying to get. And that's really something. Bobrovsky didn't have to do a ton of side-to-side lateral movement going from one side to try and cover in the open side because the Blue Jackets, as you said, had sticks everywhere. They just didn't allow Tampa Bay to do what they wanted to do, which is utilize their speed and create open ice, essentially, and get people on their heels. The Jackets were not on their heels most of this series. They were in the first period of Game 1. They were in the third period of Game 3 at Nationwide Arena a little bit, and Tampa Bay closed the gap, tied the game before the Blue Jackets were able to take the lead back and ultimately win it. So the defense, I think, was an absolutely huge portion of this series win.
Ryan, it seems like the narrative around the hockey world is everyone wants to talk about how the President's Trophy winning Tampa Bay Lightning, the team that tied for the most wins in NHL history, dropped the ball in this one. But it seemed to me like perhaps the better team actually won this one in the Columbus Blue Jackets. What was your take on it?
I don't know if I would go with that or not. I mean, certainly in a 7-game series, almost all the time the better team wins. Mm-hmm. The Blue Jackets had the better plan. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the fact that they played head-to-head 3 times during the regular season and Tampa Bay outscored the Jackets by a composite score of 17-3 says that Tampa Bay can beat the Blue Jackets and beat them badly. But there's a difference when you get to the playoffs because, you know, during the regular season there are, you know, travel advantages or disadvantages, playing back-to-backs, playing away from home, playing on home ice where the Blue Jackets were not great during the regular season. A lot of things can factor into regular season games. But during the playoffs, you get to know a team very, very well. The Lightning, I think they took themselves out of their game plan a little bit, and I don't know if it was a pride thing or what, but you know, coming into the series, what was the talk? The Blue Jackets are going to try and bang around the Lightning, wear them down, slow them down, play physical. Well, Tampa Bay came out and started throwing bodies all over the place, as if to say, hey, guess what? We're a physical team too. We can play that way. It turned out they couldn't, because it took them away from what they do best. By trying to be a physical team, it took them away from their speed and their transition and all that other stuff. So I don't know that I would necessarily say that the Blue Jackets are the better team in the 2018-2019 season. What I would say is that they executed their game plan perfectly, and by doing so frustrated the Tampa Bay Lightning to the point where they could not corral themselves. I mean, we saw it with some of the bad penalties they took, and Kucherov being suspended for a game for a stupid boarding penalty, and you could see the frustration. So I think that's really what happened over that week-long stretch of games, is that the Blue Jackets became the better team by executing their plan to perfection.
Speaking with Ryan Mitchell, the Blue Jackets Radio Network, exciting first series win. And I want to ask you about this, Ryan. You were in the building that night. I've had the opportunity to be there for some big wins, but it sounded like the roof was about to blow off this thing. Can you describe that atmosphere for us for both home games, both Game 3 and Game 4?
boy, I don't know if I can describe the atmosphere in just a few words. It was incredible there. The noise really from, and you know, you go to games 3 and 4 up 2-0. If they had come home down 2-0, I don't know that you would have had sellouts in that building. I don't know what the energy level would have been like because of the past playoff history. But coming home up 2-0, playing very well, showing heart, it was just phenomenal inside that building from the beginning of the game and actually before the beginning of the game to the conclusions. Game 4 particularly, there were, in the lower bowl, I don't know if fans sat down the entire game. It was bonkers. And even after Tampa Bay would score a goal, they scored their first goal and the building hushed a little bit, but before the puck dropped to begin play, they were right back on their feet in full throat. It was amazing. The fans were incredible. They were having a great time. John Tortorella said he got beer dumped on him in excitement a couple of times during the game and then after from the fans sitting right behind the Blue Jackets bench. It was a tremendous atmosphere. I don't think I have ever heard in my life a building louder for a sporting event than what we saw in games 3 and 4 at Nationwide Arena. The press box, the broadcast booth is way up at the top there. And you know, you get up there by the ceiling where the noise just reverberates. During Game 3, when the Blue Jackets in that first period scored a couple of quick goals, you couldn't hear the goal calls from the PA announcer. It was so loud in there. And you could barely hear the cannon going off. It was so loud. So the atmosphere was phenomenal. I expect no matter what happens in the first two games of the next round that it's going to be the same Nationwide. I actually just out of personal curiosity, jumped on a ticket purchasing website this morning. Tickets went on sale at 10 a.m., and I jumped into the queue, and there were 2,500 people ahead of me. So that says that tickets are, I mean, by this time, tickets might be gone. Who knows? But certainly people are excited about it. The atmosphere outside of Nationwide Arena prior to Game 4 when they had the Plaza Party and afterwards after the sweep was phenomenal. So Columbus is really, really bought into Blue Jackets hockey.
Pretty special to see the emotion on some of the guys, too. I know George Matthews came back for a couple of those games. Jean-Luc Grandpierre, one of the original Blue Jackets, was up there with you guys in the radio booth. It's going to be exciting to kind of see those guys and everything they've kind of put in to help build this organization and see where it's come to this point with that first-round victory.
Yeah, it was fun to see George up in the broadcast booth. He jumped up before Game 4 to say hello to everybody. And you know, he obviously spent a lot of years here, and he's back at Prince Edward Island these days. But he is certainly a huge part of this Jackets organization. Jean-Luc's been on with me for the pre- and post-game show and intermissions for the past 3 years during the playoffs, and he really is enjoying this moment for the Blue Jackets fans. He still lives here in the Columbus area. One of the really neat things for me to see was Billy Davich, who does the pre- and intermission and post-game for Fox Sports. Really get emotional after Game 4. He's been with this organization since the very beginning in a plethora of roles, and he announced his retirement about a month or two back. And so for Billy, it was really emotional to reflect upon what this series win meant, and it means a lot to a lot of people who have been waiting a long, long time for this.
Again, we're talking with Ryan Mitchell with the Columbus Blue Jackets Radio Network. But Ryan, of course, wears many, many hats, especially this time of the year. And as a matter of fact, I know you're on your way up to Toledo tonight to watch the Mudheads take on the Columbus Clippers. And boy, as far as the Clippers go, I want to talk a little bit of baseball here before we wrap things up. Taking a look at some of the outfield prospects that the Clippers have right now and a lot of Indians fans have their eyes on as well. Oscar Mercado is a guy that a lot of Indians fans really kind of fell in love with during spring training. Looked like he got out to a good start, but then kind of slowed down a little bit. In the games that you've seen him play this year, Ryan, what kind of stands out about Oscar Mercado?
Well, the first thing with Oscar, obviously, is the speed. He can really, really fly. He had a ton of stolen bases last year in the Cardinals AAA spot there in Memphis before he came over. He slowed down considerably after the transition. I think he was just trying to get used to being with the new team. Already this year, he is 7-for-8 in stolen base attempts, so he is right back on the horse. He's batting .313. You know, this time of year, things can, in terms of batting average, can swing wildly from one game to another. An Indians prospect, Will Benson, for Lake County, yesterday hit 4 home runs, and it raised his slugging percentage 300 points in one day. So looking at the rate stats, the batting averages and things like that at this time of year can be misleading. But Mercado right now is hitting well. He's got 15 hits, I believe, in 48 at-bats. So he's doing well. He's still learning a little bit the outfield. He robbed a home run the other day with a tremendous leaping catch. He's going to be good, I think. I think he's got a lot of tools. The Indians' outfield is certainly not a settled situation in any way, shape, or form. They would love to have somebody come in and really grab onto one of those spots. Bradley Zimmer is still trying to come back from injury. And, you know, Zimmer played really well defensively at times for the Indians, but he's going to have to figure out how to hit major league pitching. So there are definitely opportunities there for Oscar Mercado and some of these other Clippers.
One of the other Clippers I want to ask you about in that outfield is another guy that certainly turned some heads during spring training. Trace Thompson, of course, has a pretty interesting history, a very athletic bloodline, to say the least. Well, what are some of your general impressions of him a few weeks into the season?
Well, he can move well. He actually reminds me a little bit of a right-handed hitting Bradley Zimmer in that he's tall, he's got really long levers, the swing can get a bit long at times, and that can be problematic when something goes wrong, when you get out of your swing and you have such long arms and legs and there's a lot of moving parts, it can be tough to corral that. You know, when he broke into the major leagues with the White Sox several years back, for a brief period of time, he looked very, very good. He hit .295, but he's never been able to recapture that since. It's been a slow start to him for the season. A .150 batting average so far, and he's still trying to find himself. He doesn't have a home run. He's only got 5 runs batted in, but you know, clearly the success has been there in the past. He's had a lot of injury issues, so when that's the case, teams are hopeful that once this guy gets healthy, we can fine-tune and refine and get him back to the things that gave him success, and then maybe we have found ourselves a diamond in the rough. Will that happen? I don't know. Obviously, the International League is the tougher pitching of the AAA leagues, so if he can get things back to where he needs to be offensively and show that he can hit, I think defensively he'd be fine. But again, you've got to contribute offensively to be better than what the Indians have right now to earn yourself a call-up. So the Tribe obviously is no great shakes in terms of hitting. They're riding their starting pitching and some pretty good bullpen work right now. But if anybody in AAA starts to really tear the cover off the ball, I would think that they're going to get an opportunity up there in the Indians' outfield.
Tough to dispute that, no doubt about it. Well, Ryan, we know you are extraordinarily busy this time of the year, my man, so we really do appreciate you giving us some of your time. Safe travels up to Toledo and back, and we'll do this again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you again. Ryan Mitchell with the Columbus Blue Jackets Radio Network and the Columbus Clippers as well, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. We need to get to a break. Matt and I will return after this. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL.